Blog Talk Radio.
About my black brother, I love you. I'll never try to hurt you. I want you to know that I'm here for you forever too. Cause you're my black brother, strong brother, and there is no one above you.
Welcome back. It's the 5x5. I'm your host, David, and we have our co-host, Darling Nikki. You're with us today,
Hello.
Darling Nikki. I knew you were. I was just trying to bring you in. I had to work on that. It's kind of a bad intro. We need to do something. But anyhow, thanks for coming back with us today. And when was it? Was it yesterday? It was Sunday or Saturday night when the Trayvon Martin verdict was George Zimmerman verdict was in. Darla Nikki and I had a show that night, and it was totally insane. We had a ton of people, and everybody has so much emotion about this case, pro and against. And we got a lot of backlash. We were distracted. Weren't able really to express our thoughts, you know, cohesively. We had a couple calls, and we had the callers that come in and then had, you know, the not so nice things to say about what was going on, and using racial slurs and cursing and just all the silly stuff. So what I wanted to do on this show was just, you know, give our views without any interruption or distraction, so we can kind of get out how we feel about what happened. And since then, since we missed the show the other day, there's several other developments come out. Not even
a
developments.
Lot happened.
Exactly. With the juror B37 going on Anderson Cooper 360. And sharing some of her experiences in the jury room, and also the Pierce Morgan interview of Rachel Gentile. So, like I said, thank you guys. So we're going to have a show right after this show, 1 o'clock. You might have to call back in or on the next show link. We're only doing 30-minute increments now on Blog Talk Radio. But the next show is going to be at 1, and this one you guys can call in. So if you want to bear with us and how we're going to discuss the show now, and you can call in at 1 o'clock or in 30 minutes at 914-803-4988. Again, thank you guys for all your support. Darla Nikki and I have been gone for a while. We just kind of started back up after the Trayvon Martin case, with George Zimmerman being acquitted of second-degree murder and manslaughter. And thanks for checking out the website. You know, you still can reach it on Recycled Blog Talk, that blogspot.com. Also, our Facebook page at the 5x5. And you can tweet me, which I've been doing a lot of twittering within the last 48 hours, and that will be the 5x5 and the 5 star numeric, and we're also on Stu Radio as the 5x5 and iTunes. So, Nikki, what is going on through your head about what's happened since we had our last show discussing the verdict, and then right now.
Well, one of the jurors has come out and spoke. She hasn't revealed who she is. We only know this young lady as B37, and she happens to be a white female who is a daughter of an Air Force captain. I recently heard that she was married to an attorney, has 2 sons. One is a university student, but her mind was made up before she even got into the courtroom, let alone took the seat as a juror. And I say that because she talked about having some preconceived notions as far as his heart, meaning George Zimmerman's heart, was in the right place, but it just went too far. And so my question is, if it went too far, doesn't that mean he's guilty? But
exactly, that's what I thought too. I'm like, how can you say that and then acquit him of being guilty of something, even if it was a lowercase of manslaughter? Because when I was listening to her, I mean, when I heard it, I felt worse about the verdict than I did when the actual verdict came out.
And I was horrified. Right, because when they first went back to the room to deliberate, all of them together, because, you know, the way they do it is they're sequestered, so none of them are supposed to be talking to each other, you know, it's no talking during dinner and that kind of thing. I don't even know if they take lunch together or have breaks together or what have you, but they hear, you know, all the evidence. They were in the courtroom for 4 weeks, I believe. So they never had time to meet all at once. So once they finally met all at once, the 6 jurors were pretty much split. There were 3 that were not guilty, that had a not guilty vote. There was 1 a manslaughter vote. No, I'm sorry, 2 manslaughter votes.
Two not guilty and one manslaughter.
Yeah. No, let's see. 3, I think it's 3 not guilty, 1 that was second-degree murder and 2 manslaughter.
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right.
Okay. So that was before they started deliberating. You know, they took that first vote. And so then that next vote, before that next vote, they had a question that came in, oh, I'd say about, 10 o'clock at night after dinner, after they had dinner at 8 o'clock, I think about 9 or 10 at night, they came. And you can tell I've been watching the news like a hawk, or I've been on my phone with these CNN push notifications. But they had where they had a question for the judge, and their question was, well, what's included in the manslaughter charge? And I think, if I'm not mistaken, what they were asking is what kind of evidence goes into the manslaughter charge? You know, were they going to consider, like, his getting out of the car and following Trayvon? You know, were they going to consider all that before the quote-unquote T, where the fight supposedly happened? So that's what, you know, the question was about. And so the judge answered the question. After she answered the question, it took about an hour, I think, and then they came back with the verdict at 11:30 Saturday night.
Yeah, and so I remember what juror B37 said. She said nothing else mattered. Not about how he, when the 911 dispatcher told her, we don't need you to be following this person, although he was asking him specific questions about how the person looked. She said it didn't matter until the seconds. So this whole time, this whole scenario is going on, it didn't matter until seconds when George Zimmerman felt like he was danger of losing his life or grave bodily injury. I'm like, wow, this young man's life came down to, a decision came down to seconds. You know, and I was talking to somebody earlier about how Trayvon Martin was a youth. And I know there's, I'm not too naive enough to think that all youth are young men or college students are good kids, or, you know, I'm not that naive. But I will say, maturity is one thing, and I think Trayvon Martin, whatever he did, we will never know because he is dead. His decisions were made from a child's filter. Us as adults, we have a common sense filter through our life experiences. And George Zimmerman, he was in his late 20s. He wasn't a child by any means, but we have a common sense filter that we use to process our environment. And I think he could have processed his environment a lot better because he was the adult in this situation. And he chose to stand his ground and take this man's life without considering this is a child. He even knew this person was a teen. So his disregard for a young person's life is what I'm totally appalled by. And I'm appalled by the B37, her whole attitude toward race, it seems like, I want to ask you, do you think she's lived in a box all her life? Because she seems like she didn't connect, and commentators have come out and said this, like, she didn't connect with Rachel Gentile. She doesn't connect with the Black community. Mm-hmm. And for one, that's not her fault. But I don't think that you can fairly judge somebody who's dead.
I think all six of the... all six of them. Heck, all six of them lived in a box, and they probably lived in the same box that each other grew up in. And the reason I say that is because all of them, I will be willing to bet that all of them have that same mentality as she does or she did. Plus the fact, when I listened to her talk on Anderson Cooper, she really sounded like she related to George Zimmerman.
Yeah, well, because he lived in her community. He looks like her. He shares half her heritage, and like everybody wants to talk about race without talking about it, you know. And because she blatantly said this case was not about race, you know. And I wanted to get into what she said about Rachel Gentile, which everybody has condemned this poor lady. Well, yeah, she's a kid too. She's 19 years old. Obviously has some educational deficiencies, but is that her fault? I had a friend on Facebook. I don't know if I told you, and he puts on there, "Dear Mrs. Gentile, before you give another interview, go get some education before you open your mouth." And I think that's harsh. This was a Black person. I'm like, that is harsh. Why are we turning on her? Because her education today is not going to change. She's not going to get an advanced degree in chemistry tomorrow so she can be able to express herself the way we think she needs to express herself. Go ahead.
What I say to that is, before you talk about her education, have you invested $1 million in your education system? Before you can say anything about her education, have you invested $1 million in your state's education system? And, you know, these teachers, these school systems right now have lost so much money, okay? And they're not even teaching cursive anymore. One of the things that came up in the trial when she was testifying was that she couldn't read cursive, okay? The newscaster had said something about that. The newscaster looked to be a white male in his 30s, okay? If he has a child, or, you know, his child isn't going to know cursive. They're not teaching that in school. You know,
no, they do not teach you cursive. Yeah, I have a 12-year-old nephew, and they don't teach handwriting in school anymore, you know. And I think it's
unfair. But Rachel Gentile, she's smarter than I am, because her first and second language is different from mine. It's Haitian and it's Spanish. I knew Spanish very, very briefly when I was young, like maybe 4 or 5 years old. Do I know it now? No. I took French in high school. Do I know it now? Not really. No. You know, and her third language is English. So is she smarter than me? Yeah, she is. You know,
I can understand Spanish. I can have a conversation with a Hispanic person and understand and get my point across to somebody speaking Spanish. My point is, I don't care what her education is. I don't care her lack of education, because I don't need her. Because she's representing me. No, she's representing herself. That's what the person on Facebook was saying. She's representing, and Black people need to make education more important, and her parents should be ashamed. I'm like, where do you get off?
No.
Maybe your parents were able to afford to take you out of inner city school and put you in a school in the suburb where the education is a little bit easier, and you was able to go into college and succeed and graduate. And I'm like, this thing is so fair. And this is, for me, the disconnect in a Black community where you have educated persons and then you have uneducated persons. And a lot of times those sects of the community are so separate that this is what I told him. I said, the same attitude you have about Rachel Gentile's way he spoke is the same reason Juror B37 discredit said she wasn't credible. And I don't think that's fair. It's a prejudgment, and for us to prejudge her, I thought she was absolutely delightful on Piers Morgan. Yeah, she spoke very, very, for lack of a better term, hood, you know, but that was her. And I think she was being, somebody had put it, so she was painfully honest on Piers Morgan.
But with education to the side, I really do believe that her honesty during the trial on the stand showed through. I mean, she was the last person that was on the phone with him literally minutes before he lost his life. And if there's anything I'm concerned about is, and you really can't see it, you really can't tell, she seems to be, when she was on Piers, she seems to be, you know, delightful, and she seems to be glad it's over, and she looks really good. I'm really concerned about her mental health, though. I mean, how traumatic is it that she is on the phone? Can you imagine being on the phone with someone that's a really good friend of yours, and before they die? But I do
exactly say for instance, after we end our conversation here, one of us has to die tragically. You know how messed up I would be. I would be messed up. Real quick, I have CNN on the background. Breaking news: 4 jurors. We did what the law required us to do, and juror B 37 opinions are her own. So maybe they are not embracing what she had to say. But for they did what the law required them to do. I think we'll hear from any of these jurors for a long time. Juror B37, I think she's going to go in hiding as well. I don't know what the answer is going forward. How do we make somebody like B37 relate to the black cause, the black situation, the black problem in America?
Well, first of all, there's a petition to stop this baby's book.
It's already been stopped. It's stopped. That's a done deal.
Yeah. So there's a petition. So that's done. But you know, the John Guy, the attorney for the prosecution, he presented during his closing argument, and he said, and I quote, "This case is not about race. It's about right and wrong." And the reason that I can kind of agree to that. For a certain extent, because he, even though I don't agree with it, and let me explain, I don't agree with it. I believe it's totally about race. However, I think that's the way he had to put it to them, because if he had said it was about race, he would have lost them before he got to the end of the sentence, you know.
Yeah, because, again, with their own life experiences, they wasn't
exactly.
A majority of white America. They think since we have a black, a biracial president, that the racial situation in America has gone away. And so they were like, well, you finally got what you wanted all these years. But Mark Gergos, a defense attorney, he said, he says race is always an issue in criminal court. He says, I see it every day. Y'all just happen to see it this time because it's made national news. It's a powerful case that has polarized America once again. And he's like, but this happens every day. He says, that's where we need to start fixing this problem. He said, and the prosecution, even though, and I think the judge was at fault too, and she says, you can't use racial profiling. You have to say it's criminal profiling. I think that's a problem. Now, this is why I hope the DOJ will look into this case and retry Zimmerman, because I think things were definitely left out, and the state didn't fulfill the family and Trayvon's needs by prosecuting this case the correct way.
Right. So let's talk about character. When you let's put race to the side, let's put education to the side. And by the way, I don't even think I was listening to that B37 juror. She's not even educated. She was putting S's at the end of words, and I was like, chick, don't do that. You need to take another English class. Try English 101. But anyway, back to the Department of Justice. I was listening to Eric Holder speak And he was saying how he, you know, he's even been racial profiled. He said even when he was a major prosecutor, he said that he was stopped by law enforcement and, you know, was asked why he was, I don't know, driving down the street or I don't know. He was stopped. He said he wasn't speeding, but he was stopped because someone had committed a crime that looked like him, you know, and he was a prosecutor at the time. So there's something that needs to be done, you know, and I feel like this is a wake-up call. It's a wake-up call for blacks. It's a wake-up call for whites. And something definitely needs to be done. I do want to say there is going to be an 100 city rally, and it's going to be noon this Saturday.
Oh, wow.
Huh?
So, oh, wow, I hadn't heard that. I know that some of the major cities have been protesting, and I totally don't agree. Thing is with black people, we, and I've said the other day, we rally behind on Icon Show, on Off Limits broadcast. We rally behind the wrong things. Okay, we can be mad about this, we can be angry about it, but we need to be receptive of the conversation that needs to be had. Tearing up things and acting a fool in the street is the reason why Trayvon Martin is dead and George Zimmerman acquitted. Because whether it's right or wrong, that's what they want to see, and that's what they expect to see. Black, that's what they expect us to behave, so they can say, look, there they go again. They want to use that against us. So stop giving people, I'm not even going to say people that's not black, a reason to think we're less than civil when matters like this happen. You know, we need to, we have work to do. And I keep saying that because I don't want my nephew to grow up in a world to where he can be profiled or even be able to a group of peers, and he's lumped in that group if they're misbehaving, and he's going to, because I know what Cap Kitty is, and they're going to say he's doing the same thing because he looks like them, he may talk like them, he's by them, so therefore he's just like them. And I think that's totally unfair, and that's how white America sees us. Oh, and I didn't tell you because we haven't talked on the phone in a couple of days, but I told you about me being profiled in the hospital the other day. I have a meeting with the head director of security for the hospital here in town where this occurred, because when it was weighing on me, so I finally called yesterday and explained what had happened, and the person, she was receptive, and she says, well, we'll have to look up, she said, well, you know, to be on videotape. I'm like, okay, roll the videotape. This is exactly where I was, this is what time it was.
You should have said thank God, like
okay,
said, thank God there's a thing.
So she called me back again. She's like, can you give me a specific time? I'm like, sure. And then she says, which was very, very odd, she's like, so you're telling me you're not Caucasian? Because I wouldn't say, well, you know, hey, just don't. Not that I can't talk like that, because I can talk and I can fit into any group. It doesn't matter. But when I was trying to express myself, and I guess where some of the people in reference to Rachel Gentile, I had to express myself so they would take me seriously. So I can understand, I can relate. I'm not going to condemn her for her vocabulary or her communication skills, but I had to get out what I had to say in a way to where she was going to receive me and take it seriously, because she did, at that point, she didn't know I was black. And she said, oh, I said, no, this is exactly what I told her. I said, I'm about as black as they come. And she kind of chuckled, and she's like, okay. And then maybe 15 minutes later, she called me. She's like, are you available for a meeting this week? She's like, because the director of security would like to speak with you on this matter. She's like, I'm so sorry. And obviously they've seen on the videotape what I expressed on the phone call about this person following me, and I already went through that. But so I'm talking with him tomorrow at 1 o'clock. So stay tuned. I'll be able to share that story with everybody.
This is racial profiling number 3 or 4, because we had a show about that maybe a month ago.
I think we did. It's unfortunate. And
Shopping while black,
living while black. But I was telling Icon today, it's like Atlanta will spoil you for the rest of the world. I had to, and you've lived in the Midwest all your life. Of course, for the majority of my life, I have too, but when we've had this conversation as well, I moved to Atlanta, and it was reversed. I was like, where are all the white folks? Because I lived in a very, very beige community, brown community, where I didn't have to, not that I didn't have to or even want to for that matter, that wasn't even an option. It was just black everywhere, restaurants, grocery stores. I didn't have to mix if I didn't want to. And like I told a lady the other night on Twitter, I said, I have to live in your world. You don't have to live in mine. And that's
right.
You know, outside of Atlanta, that's how the rest of America, we have to live in the world, and you know, and but they have to be accountable for their actions, and how they fit us into a perceived how
box.
They look at
they
us
put
on
us
a day to day basis. They
right.
put us in a box.
They put us in a box that, oh, you know, that's why she said, oh, you're black. And my response would have been, well, you know, if you can get a pen and a piece of paper and write this down, I'm about a fifth Irish, two-thirds French, a third and a fourth Indian. And, I mean, I would have just, you know, I mean, because she doesn't need to know all that. It's like, well, I mean, yeah, she doesn't need your description, I guess, but... You know, they kill me with that, you know, so.
And I just think it's one, funny.
One thing I, you know, want to talk about is, you know, with race aside, going back to the trial, education aside, you got to, you know, they were trying to inject his character as far as Trayvon's character, but they didn't interject George Zimmerman's character at all, you know, and
yeah, we talked about this the other night. Well, how come they
right.
didn't bring up all this stuff that this person allegedly has done? And I guess the charge was dropped, but he did have a restraining order on him at one time. He has had run-ins up the law. He was a wannabe cop that didn't make the grade. Why didn't the prosecution bring this up? Why didn't they use this to characterize what kind of person, and even from people just talking in his community, he's a kind of a bully, wannabe Billy Badass. And why wouldn't that brought up? Why don't these people come forward and like, you know, we're not going to let him get off because this is who this person is, and we're going to let them paint him into this survivalist person that was just protecting his life, because that's not what happened.
No.
In my
no.
opinion.
No, and in fact, if all that had come up, I believe you had stated that there was something on his MySpace page where he was racial profiling and he was even making racist slurs. So if all that had come up, I believe that that would have been a factor, you know. That would have set the stage. That would have wrote the script, so to speak, you know, for the jury to put the story together. And on that note, the prosecution did okay, but I really don't think that they gave me that punch I needed to get,
exactly.
like the OJ trial gave me, the defense from the OJ trial gave me. I mean, that, I don't know if you remember, because I didn't even really watch that whole trial, but I just remember they kept playing over and over and over and over, you know, if the glove doesn't fit, you must have quit. I mean, but I didn't get that punch on either one of their sides, really, you know, but definitely I didn't get it on the prosecution side. You know, in fact, they put witnesses up there that I had to, and I watched the whole thing, and I had to ask myself, is this person for the prosecution or for the defense, you know?
Exactly.
One thing I do want to say is, I believe her name is Angela Corey, and she's a state prosecutor. She started acting really weird when she was making her speech at the end of the trial. I don't know if you heard
yeah,
or not.
It was weird.
Because I was like, well, she's being really nice and, you know, I don't know, proper if you want to go there. But, I mean, you know, she was like just – and I thought, okay, yeah, she seems kind of cheery, but maybe she's just being – trying to be
it,
nice.
It was very odd.
But
well, let's say that we're going to go into the next show. So, guys, if you guys want to call back in to the show, we're going to start at 1 o'clock after show, 914-803-4988. Click on Trayvon Martin after show for the next show. We'll be right back. Darling Nikki, don't forget to call back in, okay?
Okay. Bye-bye.